This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Swapping insults. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Thursday, October 17. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi pointed a finger at each other during a meeting designed to be about next steps in Syria.
General Motors and the United Auto Workers have reached a tentative labor agreement that could end a month-long strike.
Chicago teachers are going on strike after failing to reach a contract agreement. Classes are canceled today in the nation's third largest school district.
And Americans unwilling or unable to prepare for the next economic downturn.
40% of Americans say they're not prepared. It's only a little bit more than half have, you know, either somewhat or very prepared for it. But we did find that the majority of Americans are taking some steps to shore up their finances in the event of a recession, regardless of when it comes.
Greg McBride at Bankrate.com on our preparedness for a potential recession. His analysis in about 25 minutes. Breaking this morning, longtime Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings has died. His office made the announcement earlier today, saying the 68-year-old succumbed to a handful of health complications. Mr. Cummings was a native of Baltimore who represented a large portion of the city during his time on Capitol Hill.
Come to Baltimore. Do not just criticize us, but come to Baltimore, and I promise you, you will be welcome. I promise you, we will give you every bit of hospitality we've got.
He was first elected to Congress in 1996. Again, Elijah Cummings dead at 68. Other news from Washington. House Republicans deserted President Trump to oppose his withdrawal of troops for northern Syria. That's a prelude to a contentious White House meeting. House Democrats and Republicans voted overwhelmingly yesterday to oppose his troop pullout and urge the administration to contain the fallout from Turkey's incursion into Syria. The House measure, which passed by a vote of 354 to 60, was unanimously backed by Democrats. They were joined by 129 Republicans on the high-profile matter. Mr. Trump spoke before a meeting at the White House.
We're killing ISIS. We're 7,000 miles away. Russia's much closer. Iran is right there. Turkey is right there. They all hate ISIS.
Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, meanwhile, were set to travel to Turkey for talks today. In advance of the diplomacy to Ankara, the White House released a brief letter written by Mr. Trump to Turkey's president in which Mr. Trump urged his counterpart to be reasonable, urging him, quote, "Don't be a fool." Legislative leaders on Capitol Hill huddling with Trump administration officials after the House vote found a surprise ending to a meeting designed to discuss Turkey and Syria. The get-together at the White House yesterday resulted in congressional Democrats walking out after they claimed President Trump was demeaning toward House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
He was insulting, particularly to the Speaker. She kept her cool completely. But he called her a third-rate politician.
House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy.
The Speaker tries to make everything political. Her own statements weren't productive. To storm out of a meeting, which I've watched time before during other crises, is really not the ability of a Speaker or the style how a Speaker should carry herself out.
The president later tweeted a photo of the meeting with Mrs. Pelosi standing at the table. In his tweet, Mr. Trump said she had an unhinged meltdown. Mrs. Pelosi then made that the cover photo on her Twitter and Facebook pages. That, of course, went viral. Well, as you know, House Democratic leadership is holding off on a vote to launch a formal impeachment inquiry for now. What does this mean politically? Let's get caught up with all the different angles of this story with team coverage that begins with Natalie Andrews, congressional reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Natalie, what are you hearing?
Republicans and Donald Trump himself have been pushing for this vote to start an impeachment inquiry, and they cite that there have been House-wide votes in the past to start an impeachment inquiry, and they believe this could give them some powers of the minority, as has happened in the past. So Nancy Pelosi started kind of polling her caucus on what they think, and what she found was that the caucus doesn't want to take a vote on this for several reasons. One, there are several Democrats who need to win seats in districts that Donald Trump won, and they are worried about being on the record voting for an impeachment inquiry, which could also be seen as voting for impeachment. And there's also some members who don't want to go toward the Republican talking points. They don't want to be seen as being goaded into a vote by the president.
Right. To be clear, correct me if I'm wrong, the House can make almost whatever rules it wants when it conducts some sort of inquiry like this, right?
Yes. The Constitution is vague on how the House can impeach a president or elected official. It does not go into how they should be doing it. And so what we've looked at is the three previous presidential impeachments or efforts and kind of what they've looked at.
So on Wednesday, as you are aware, these congressional leaders go to the White House to discuss things like Syria, right? And you use the word devolve. The meeting devolves. What happened?
So we know that Democrats and Republican leaders were headed to the White House. The topics were of national security. The House had a vote to rebuke the president's Syria policy. And it appears that the meeting really was not a classical sit-down between leaders of Congress and the president like you might see in the West Wing. It was much more of something that devolved. This was the first time that Nancy Pelosi had really interacted with the president since the House began its impeachment inquiry. Democrats said that Donald Trump called Speaker Pelosi a name. That name was either third-rate politician or third-grade politician, and Democrats walked out.
We're speaking with Natalie Andrews, congressional reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She's trying to connect a lot of moving parts here with regards to the impeachment inquiry. And then we had testimony from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, one of his former aides, correct?
Yes. And really all day this week and most of last week, we've been seeing these former State Department officials, the former ambassador to Ukraine. They've been coming into this room and they march through the Capitol and then go behind closed doors. And so that happened Wednesday with Michael McKinley, who resigned from the State Department last week.
And so he is saying what, to the best of our knowledge?
Well, we know from people familiar with the testimony that he said he left his post in part over frustration with how the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, handled how former Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch was treated. He felt like when the president released the call with Ukraine president that the State Department should have issued some sort of statement of support of this long-term ambassador who had served in both Republican and Democratic administrations. And he said he was met with radio silent and was not, and that really upset Mr. McKinley.
Are we getting details of what these witnesses are saying, by the way, behind closed doors? Is that going to be a thing?
Democrats at some point do want to release this, and we don't know whether that's going to be in a report or public hearings or some sort of framework of both. We do know that one reason why they're doing this behind closed doors, and this has happened in previous investigations, is because they don't want the people who are testifying to rely on each other's testimony.
Thanks, Natalie. Natalie Andrews, congressional reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Just three things in life are certain: death, taxes, and the great fit I get every time with Mack Weldon underwear. It's a fact. Buying underwear is a gamble. The size you wear in this brand is not the size you wear in that brand. Materials vary, waistbands vary, and you never know if the fit and feel is wrong till it's too late and your money is gone. Well, no more. Put your money on Mack Weldon and you'll get a great fit every time. Shopping simplified and money is saved because Mack Weldon engineers their own fabric, and their meticulous design process ensures a consistently perfect fit and feel with every pair, every time. Listen, if you don't love your first pair, keep them for free. Plus, get a refund, no questions asked. Mack Weldon, the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants you'll ever wear. And right now, get 20% off your first order at MackWeldon.com when you enter the promo code Gordon. That's MackWeldon.com and enter the promo code Gordon for 20% off your first order. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Thursday. There's some really busy news happening yesterday. Here's one of the items. The United Auto Workers Union has struck a tentative labor deal with General Motors, trying to end a month-long strike that has brought more than 30 GM factories to a standstill. The union and GM management are trying to finalize an agreement for more than 46,000 factory workers. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
As part of the new agreement, GM would invest more than $7 billion over the four-year contract period, creating or preserving about 9,000 jobs. GM also joined with others to invest another $1 billion in facilities near an assembly plant in Ohio, where the company hopes to sell to a startup electric truck maker. The Wall Street Journal says those investments would create more than 1,000 extra jobs. The deal includes wage increases of 3% in 2 years of the contract and 4% bonus payments in the other two. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Also, as part of the agreement, GM will move forward with plans to close or sell three U.S. factories that are currently idle, including the Lordstown, Ohio plant. The closures will help GM's bottom line by boosting its manufacturing efficiency in the U.S., which has lagged behind competitors for years. This portion of the program is brought to you by Lightstream. We talk about interest rates in the news almost every day, but the rates that really impact your day-to-day life are the ones on your credit card. I know I get stressed out when it comes to high-interest credit card bills. Who doesn't, right? But there is a way out. Pay off your credit card balances and save money with a credit card consolidation loan from my friends at Lightstream. Get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. That's a lot lower than the over 20% national average rate. Apply online, apply on your phone. You can get the money as early as the day you apply. Do you believe that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience? Well, so does Lightstream. So that's what they deliver. Just for our listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/deal. That's LIGHTSTREAM. Lightstream.com/deal. Subject to credit approval, the rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/deal for more information. Again, lightstream.com/deal. It's 20 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, a senior U.S. delegation faces the Herculean task of pressuring Turkey to accept a ceasefire in northern Syria, hours after President Trump declared the U.S. has no stake in defending Kurdish fighters who died by the thousands as the U.S.'s partners against Islamic State extremists. Vice President Mike Pence, heading a U.S. delegation that includes Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, is set to arrive in Turkey this afternoon, a day after Trump dismissed the very crisis he sent his aides on an emergency mission to douse. Trump suggested that a Kurdish group is a greater terror threat than the Islamic State group.
We're killing ISIS. We're 7,000 miles away. Russia's much closer. Iran is right there. Turkey is right there. They all hate ISIS.
Trump welcomed the efforts of Russia and the Assad government to fill the void left after he ordered the removal of nearly all U.S. troops. The U.S. ambassador to the European Union is expected to tell House lawmakers conducting an impeachment inquiry that he was merely repeating President Trump's reassurances when he told another envoy that there was no quid pro quo in the administration's dealings with Ukraine. Gordon Sondland, scheduled to appear today, would be the latest in a series of witnesses to be interviewed behind closed doors by House lawmakers. Trump blocked his appearance last week, but Democrats promptly subpoenaed Sondland. Chicago parents and community groups are scrambling to prepare for a massive teacher strike that starts today, prompting the city to preemptively cancel classes in the nation's third largest school district. Union head Jesse Sharkey says its 25,000 members will not be in classrooms today.
We need to have the tools that we need to do our jobs in our schools. That's extremely important.
The two sides are battling over pay, benefits, class size, and teacher preparation time. Years ago, you usually got your fashion tips from magazines. Today, you get them more from TV. A new report shows that sales of slim-fit Levi's jumped 8% last year thanks to Winona Ryder's 1980s retro look and Netflix's Stranger Things. The new series of 1920s gangster drama Peaky Blinders sparked a 25% increase in sales of flat caps, while fans of Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the star of the dark comedy Fleabag, pushed sales of black jumpsuits up 66%.
What? That is crazy. What if you don't get any fashion advice, like myself?
You just look good all the time.
You just sort of wander
along.
You
look good. Come on.
You know what? I wear stuff that's given to me, like from the Giants or from my company, like this pullover I have today.
That's good stuff.
That's how I'm outfitted. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes now after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Do have some breaking news this morning. Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings, chairman of the House Oversight Committee, has died. His office made the announcement a short while ago. Stay with us as we get more details. Meanwhile, in other news, many New Yorkers will tell you that the city is a giant maze replete with obstacles. So why would anyone spend a portion of their weekend going through an actual maze? It's a question that Wall Street Journal reporter Charles Passy asked himself repeatedly as he spent time visiting a couple of popular corn mazes in the New York City and New Jersey area. Charles, what have you found?
They have become increasingly popular throughout rural America and even in some semi-rural locations.
How elaborate are these things, Charles?
Hugely elaborate. So if you can imagine, there are actually individuals now whose sole profession is designing corn mazes, which obviously are, you know, popular in the fall, so I guess they do all their work, you know, in advance. So if you can think about it, you can have a maze that the pathways, when you look at them from above, are in the shape of a Marvel superhero character, or they might be in the shape of a tractor or a pirate ship or whatever. So the mazes actually have the design is not just some sort of aimless, I mean, it is an aimless pathway, it seems like, when you're in there, but the mazes actually outline something visually, which you don't kind of realize while you're in the maze, but if you look at a picture of the maze, you will see. So they are hugely intricate, and they can be, you know, 10 acres or more in some instances, so they're also pretty large.
Wow. And they can be disorienting, as you point out, because, I mean, these corn stalks, I don't know, what, 10 feet high, maybe more, right? So you can't really tell where you're going because you can't see, you know, some 8-story barn as your marker on the horizon or something.
Right. It's very much disorienting. I will say that when you're in the maze, you can kind of, I mean, at least in the two mazes that I did, you can kind of like look and you say, well, I can kind of see in the distance the entrance where we came in, but again, you kind of know the general sense of if it's north or south, or this is where the entrance is, and that kind of thing. You can kind of sometimes see it as you kind of peer above the stalks, but actually figuring out how to get to where you need to go is another issue.
We're speaking with Charles Passy, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. He's written a piece entitled "Corn Mazes Grow in Popularity and Complexity." All right, so you visited a couple of these with your wife. What'd you guys find?
We found that we got lost pretty easily. In one instance, they added to the challenge by not giving us a map. So you kind of go in sort of blind, basically. And the key way you kind of figure your way out is they tell you that there are stations along the way of the path that you can pick up a piece of the map. And you start to tape the map together, which is all well and good if you can get enough of those things to put together the map.
It's Wall Street Journal reporter Charles Passy. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
I never get sick. Never taken a sick day. I'm not going to let a little thing like a 100-degree fever stop my business. You know what really makes me sick? Downtime. You know the cure to downtime? Grainger. With same-day pickup, next-day delivery options, and time-saving inventory solutions, Grainger keeps our facility running and fit as a fiddle. Some people go to the doctor. I go to America's trusted source for industrial supplies. Because Grainger's got my back. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When it comes to keeping your small business's valuable information safe, Dell Small Business Technology Advisors can recommend tailored security solutions like servers, storage, networking. Plus, right now, get up to 45% off select business computers with Intel Core processors. Running your own small business is a big challenge, but with the right partner, it's a lot easier. To speak with an advisor today, call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Thursday, October 17. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Word this morning that House Oversight Committee Chairman Elijah Cummings of Baltimore has died at age 68 after battling a series of illnesses. Trump and Pelosi trade insults after a meeting about Syria. Tentative deal between GM and United Auto Workers. Chicago schools close today as teachers threaten a strike. Netflix misses subscriber targets just as Disney and Apple enter the market. Game 4 of the ALCS will be played today after it was rained out last night. And the real estate agent who generously surprised an entire school district. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. What are you doing, if anything, to prepare for a potential recession? A new survey by Bankrate.com finds that 4 in 10 are not prepared if a recession hits in the next 6 to 12 months. This includes roughly 41 million people who say they are not at all prepared. More from Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. Greg, crunch the numbers.
40% of Americans say they're not prepared. It's only a little bit more than half have, you know, are either somewhat or very prepared for it. But we did find that the majority of Americans are taking some steps to shore up their finances in the event of a recession, regardless of when it comes. Most commonly, people cutting back on spending in order to save more for emergencies and pay down credit card debt. Those are positive steps, regardless of the economic environment.
Yeah, I was going to say, what does that actually mean to people to prepare? You know, start eating, just peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to cut back on the grocery bill. Like, I guess there's a lot of things you could do.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, in order to make strides on something like the emergency savings or accelerating debt repayment, that's going to mean that that money has to come from somewhere, and it's going to mean having to scale back spending in some fashion. And so spending less money was the most common response. 44% of Americans said that they are spending less money and actively spending less money in anticipation of or better preparing for an economic recession. About a third of Americans were saving more for emergencies. Another third were paying down credit card debt. Smaller percentages, people were saving more for retirement, looking for a better job or a more stable job. And we found that about a third of Americans said that they weren't doing anything to prepare for a recession.
Mm. For the folks that say they're preparing, do you get the sense that those might be leftover habits from the recession, paying attention to this kind of stuff? Or are they actually saying, geez, we're 10 plus years into this recovery, the good times have to end, so let's get ready?
Well, I think it's a combination of the two, in the sense that, you know, if these habits were permanent, we'd see better results when we pull on other things like how much emergency savings people have.
Okay.
You know, fewer than one in five households actually has an adequate emergency savings cushion, and that has not improved. And if anything, it's gotten a little bit worse throughout this economic recovery. Fewer than half of Americans have more emergency savings than they do credit card debt. That's another one that has deteriorated throughout this economic recovery. So I think for some, they've habits that were formed in the aftermath of the Great Recession have stuck with them. For the majority of Americans, less so. And if anything, the memories of that recession may be prompting them to make a little hay while the sun shines now, taking those steps to better shore up their finances in the event of an economic downturn, and doing so now while times are comparatively good.
Yeah. We're speaking with Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. They've done a survey about who's preparing for a recession. You broke this down by generation, too, right, in terms of prep? Who's doing what?
Well, the most common answer among every age group and every income group was that they were spending less money. What we did notice, though, is millennials continuing to emphasize saving more for emergencies. They had a higher incidence of saving more for emergencies than other groups. We noticed that baby boomers, for example, they were more focused focused on paying down credit card debt. Gen X and baby boomers both really had that focus. And, you know, that kind of makes sense. Those are the years where, you know, a lot of the bills are the highest, and you know, there might be the tendency to, you know, be living paycheck to paycheck so that credit card debt can work its way up. People in those age brackets had a higher inclination towards paying down that credit card debt.
Yeah. So are there a couple of tips here in general with regards to prep if, say, somebody's listening to us right now and thinks, you know what, that's a good idea?
Yeah. I think that I was encouraged by the fact that the steps that people are taking are really the you know, sort of good housekeeping of personal finance, regardless of the environment. Save more for emergencies, pay down your credit card debt, you know, even saving more for retirement. You know, you have to have earned income in order to save for retirement. So, you know, take advantage of that while you've got a steady paycheck in the event that there's any time you're out of the workforce and you can't do so. You know, you're going to be glad you did when you were in the workforce.
Thanks, Greg. Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. 20 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Hey, thanks for joining us on this Friday Eve. Welcome in. Beyond the headlines now, This Morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, they always say that records are made to be broken, and that certainly applies to breaking the internet. The latest to set a record, Jennifer Aniston. The actress, who is getting set to promote her latest TV venture, signed up for Instagram on Tuesday. And if you're not following her by now, you're one of the few who isn't. Aniston set the Guinness World Record for the fastest time to 1 million followers, just 5 hours and 16 minutes, besting the previous record of 5 hours and 45 minutes set by Prince Harry and Duchess Meghan back in April. Aniston, to this point, has just one post on her account, a grainy selfie of her along with her 5 other friends' castmates at a recent group dinner. The one pic has amassed over 12 million likes, and Aniston's new account now has over 11.3 million followers in less than 2 days.
And who is she again? This is an actress.
She was an actress. She was famous back in the 90s. She had a popular TV show on NBC you might be familiar with.
You wonder if her timing allows this to be a record. Like, if she had created an Instagram account, I don't know, 4 years ago. Like, would she have raced to the record at that point?
Right. Well, I think there's a lot of sort of pent-up demand by fans of hers, you know, because she's sort of guarded, I guess, on social media. She's not out there a lot. So anything that she puts out there through her, you know, devoted fans are just going to kind of jump right on it. Right.
She's very well managed from a media standpoint. Yes. Whether that's her or her team, I don't know.
Yes.
Why would she post a grainy picture? Is that what you said?
Well, yeah, it was like a, you know, selfie they took in somebody, I think they were in Courtney Cox's living room or something like that. And they, you know, there wasn't great lighting and whatever. Took it with her phone. And, you know, that's what came out. Just like the rest of us, you know, not all of her picks came out 100% awesome.
At the risk of sounding like a pig, I will say that there are other types of pictures of Jennifer Aniston that I would like to see.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you probably won't be seeing those on her Instagram account. I'm going to assume anytime
soon.
Just
to throw it out there.
So you know, if you're going to follow, you might just be looking look for some other thing.
Right.
And speaking of breaking records, here's one a lot of superstitious people would probably like to stay far away from. A New Jersey man broke a Guinness World Record when he unveiled a Ouija board measuring over 3,100 square feet in Massachusetts. Rick Schreck reportedly spent a year constructing the giant board dubbed Ouija-Zilla out of 99 sheets of plywood and 20 gallons of wood stain and paint. The board was unveiled in Salem, Massachusetts, home of the infamous witch trials of the 1600s, on Saturday. The first Ouija board, which supposedly allows users to speak to spirits, was designed in 1917 and was reproduced by the Parker Brothers Board Game Company in 1967. Schreck's board follows the same design as the original board and features a 400-pound planchette to slide around over the letters.
Wow.
Well, of course, you're not sliding it. The spirits, of course, are guiding it around, as you are well aware, Gordon. Now, I don't necessarily believe 100% in all the Ouija board and the spirits guiding it around and all that, but I am, you know, kind of happy that it's not here in New Jersey, and this New Jersey man took it far away to Massachusetts because, you know, better to be safe than sorry on this kind of thing.
Quite honestly, Mike, I'm not comfortable really talking about it.
Right.
You've already referenced spirits.
Right.
And the planchette moving by itself.
We've already jinxed the rest of the morning, is that what you're saying?
Just think we ought to move on from this. Tip our cap to the guy from New Jersey who constructed this in Salem. Yes.
Perhaps you want to stay in Massachusetts, sir.
Right. Let's erase the story, you know, and all records of it that we even discussed.
Sounds like a plan.
13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Now that Human Resources Director Fernando Pino has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, He's completely crushing it. He even has his own hype song.
Supporting our entire workforce. Everyone has different hours, skill sets, and pay grades. Motivating and engaging our people every step of the way.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger. I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the
top, top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top. As if there weren't enough developing stories coming out of yesterday, we've already had a couple of huge stories develop this morning, including the death of Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings. And also, just now, we're learning that there's been a Brexit deal that's been struck, announced by the UK's Boris Johnson and the EU's Jean-Claude Juncker. We'll keep you updated as the morning unfolds. Meanwhile, some observers worry America is headed toward a constitutional crisis as President Trump refuses to cooperate with Democrats' impeachment inquiry into whether he leaned on Ukrainian officials to investigate the son of his Democratic rival, Joe Biden. But there's definitely no crisis when it comes to print edition sales of the Constitution. MarketWatch says book vendors are selling an average 19,800 copies of the Constitution every month since Mr. Trump became president in January of 2017. The monthly average, by the way, is more than double the average monthly sales during the Democratic administration of Barack Obama's first term, and more than triple the monthly sales during the Republican administration of George W. Bush's second term. On Amazon, a copy of the Constitution sells for $1 in paperback, $8.49 in hardback. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Reporting Democratic Congressman Elijah Cummings of Maryland has died from complications of longtime health challenges. The 68-year-old Democrat was chairman of the powerful House Oversight Committee. The Baltimore Sun says Cummings failed to return from an unspecified medical procedure and missed two legislative roll call votes yesterday, the first day after a two-week recess. Cummings, the Baltimore attorney who served in Maryland's legislature before representing the state in the U.S. House. He said she's a third-grade politician. She said he's having a meltdown. And with that, President Trump and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi chalked up the latest explosive meeting that ended abruptly with a walkout at the White House. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says Pelosi was forced to walk out of a meeting at the White House about Syria because of the president's behavior.
It was insulting, particularly to the speaker. She kept her cool completely, but he called her a third-rate politician.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCartney.
It was very disappointing to see the Democratic leadership walk out of this meeting. I've never seen this before in my tenure in Washington.
Against the backdrop of the impeachment inquiry, Pelosi arrived at the meeting as the lawmaker who could determine Trump's political future. The UAW has struck a tentative labor deal with GM, a critical step in ending a month-long strike that has brought more than 30 GM factories in the U.S. to a standstill. The strike will continue for now as union hall leaders travel to Detroit to decide whether to end the walkout immediately or continue until the contract is ratified by rank-and-file workers, a process that could take a week or two. That decision is expected to come this morning. For about $23, you can either get a bottle of Jim Beam bourbon or spend a night at the company's distillery in Kentucky. The company has posted the Clermont property on Airbnb with reservations running through the end of the year. The posting says Jim Beam American Stillhouse renters will join the Beam family for a weekend and live like one of Jim Beam's seven generations of master distillers. The posting also promises that the three-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath rental comes with a bar fully stocked, of course, with premium Jim Beam bourbons.
Nice. Can you drink bourbon?
Nah.
I can't. I try on occasion because I want to like it. I can't.
It's like an old man's drink.
Thank you very much. I haven't figured out how to enjoy it yet. 6 minutes in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. A man in Florida has surprised his community by paying off the lunch debt of every child in the town of Jupiter. He's also sparked a movement. Local CBS 12 television says when Andrew Levy found out more than 400 students in his area were unable to receive a full meal because they couldn't afford to pay for school lunches, he stepped in. He said children shouldn't learn while hungry. Mr. Levy paid nearly $950 to cover the lunch debt at nine local schools, something he said was a modest price to pay to make a difference for each child. The real estate agent even took it one step further, saying he'll publicly fundraise every quarter to control lunch debt. His post immediately went viral. The school district of Palm Beach County, a much larger area, set up a form for people interested in helping erase the $50,000 accumulated for over 180,000 enrolled students. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.